Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, Text 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Udava Satya Kishchaiva Yachane Paramabhute. Sakiryamana Kusamai Reje Madhupati Pati. Uddhava and Satyaki began to fan the Lord with decorated fans, and the Lord, as the master of Madhu, seated on scattered flowers, commanded them along the road. Text 19. Ashruyanta shisha satyat tatta tatta jagerita nanurupa nurupascha yagunasya gunasana. It was being heard here and there that the benedictions being paid to Krishna were neither befitting nor unbefitting, because they were all for the Absolute, who is now playing the part of a human being. Purport. At places, there were sounds of Vedic benedictions aiming at the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. The benedictions were fitting in the sense that the Lord was playing the part of a human being, as if a cousin of Maharaj Yudhisthira. But they were unfitting because the Lord is absolute and has nothing to do with any kind of material relativity. He is nirguna, and there are no material qualities in him, but he's full of transcendental qualities. In the transcendental world, there is nothing contradictory, whereas in the relative world, everything has its opposite. In the relative world, white is the opposite conception of black. But in the transcendental world, there is no distinction between white and black. Therefore, the sounds of benedictions uttered by the learned Brahmanas here and there appear to be contradictory in relation with the Absolute Person. When they are applied to the Absolute Person, they lose all contradiction and become transcendental. One example may clear this idea. Lord Sri Krishna is sometimes described as a thief. He's very famous among the pure devotees as Makan Chora. He used to steal butter from the houses of neighbors at Vrindavan in his early age. Since then, he is famous as a thief. But in spite of his being famous as a thief, he is worshipped as a thief. Whereas in the mundane world, a thief is punished and never praised. Since he is the absolute personality of Godhead, everything is applicable to him, and still in spite of all contradictions, he is the supreme personality of Godhead. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Taksurunmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Adadanas Chanam Dante Idam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padam Boja Dulisham Janma Janmani Vairagya Yugbhakti Risham Piyatnai Apaya mamana bipsamandam kripam buddhiya paraduka dugi ratanistam prabhamasriyami vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu payibhacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Yadvaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo Rama Rama Hare Hare. Greetings from the Poconos, Stroudsburg, at the home of Nanda Dulal and Sivitri Bhattacharya, Das, Manu and Abhijit, many of you know them. Fortunate to be here for today. Yesterday I came. So, anyway, greetings from the Poconos. At beginning of the mountainous area of Pennsylvania on the eastern border of Pennsylvania. What is it, about an hour and a half from New York City? Less. Famous vacation spot. There's people here. I've continued the kirtan theme from the our festival of Memorial Day. Those of you on it was very wonderful. I know the family here, they didn't get out till maybe midnight on the Saturday because they were so much relishing the kirtan. So we continued, and in Princeton, the kirtan continued. We had another nice kirtan on Thursday night, even though Professor Bryant is not home. He still left the key for us to do kirtan in his house. And we went up to midnight. It was real nice. And then I went into the city, and the kirtan at the Ranadamadar, Astanga Yoga Center, whatever it is. And Ananta and Achyuta came and again did kirtan. And I'm seeing in these, I was talking about that in terms of kirtan being a very, hopefully those on the line understand the mercy and blessings got from Srila Prabhupada, how powerful it is. But the frustration is that somehow or other we're not able to share it as widely as we like. One reason is because in America, among progressive people, they don't like sectarianism. So if you present what you're doing as an institution, a church, a religion, automatically people will not be interested. That's why I have doubts about all this effort to build big Indian temples for preaching in America. Because sometimes I doubt you're advertising that we're sectarian. And if you want the... there's positive and negative, but, for progressive Western people, they're not looking for religion. They're looking for transformation and consciousness. And the progressive people universally accept kirtan now as a non-sectarian, and we have Shuddha Kirtan, because see, we have the holy name. It's you can chant the holy name in different ways, but if you come from a line of Srila Prabhupada, you're taught that this mantra is for the pleasure of God, and when it's chanted in that mode, it has something very valuable inside, in a sense. So it's a very different thing, and people pick up on it. So I'm seeing in these type of settings, and I like to do it upstate New York also, these type of settings, people feel free to come, and we're at Kastubis. It's very nice, you may have a Sunday feast in a temple, but how many new people come? Right? So here, 8, 10, 15, 20 people may come that are new besides devotees. But I see people are coming regularly, and they love the kirtan, and they're experiencing something, because they're hearing it with innocence, and it's chanted with purity. And even in Princeton, one very, very nice lady, she's become a devotee, just by the kirtan, and very nice, and she even had a program I heard at her house, invited these people in the Edison congregation. So it's so nice, this kirtan. So now we're at a part of the Bhagavatam which is really juicy, relishable, because it's Krishna in a relationship with his devotees very intimately. So this first canto is like introduces this subject. Param satyam dhimahi. This is Prayojana, this is Abhideya, this is Sambandha. Param satyam, the absolute truth. Param satyam dhimahi. Actually, it's Abhideya. Meditate. That's the process to realize the absolute truth. And then it's described what that absolute truth is. It's a person who eternally, the absolute truth is a person. We're persons. We come from the absolute truth. He has that quality of personality. And the absolute reality is this relationship. That's the why? Because that's the way the absolute reality made the absolute. That's what the absolute reality is. That's what the absolute reality wants, and we see it manifested in this world in an impure, perverted way. It's a very reasonable conception of the absolute reality. When you're free from illusion, you're swimming in rasa. Rasa vaisaha. That's what it is. And this is a glimpse of that, with that absolute reality, relating with his devotees. And we see here in this chapter, he's leaving, finally, he's done the work, and he's leaving. And we're seeing the exchanges and how the devotees cannot tolerate the separation, and we can't even imagine. We have some concept of what is pleasure, either sensual or even emotional and love and things like that. But can you imagine it at the perfectional state? The pleasure it is at the perfectional state? We have some frame of reference. We have some affections in this world that give us pleasure. But the object of affection is not perfect. What is it? I forgot that verse, but there's a verse in the second canto that describes perfectional. That it's anatta, it's unlimited, it's artha, it's real. So there's no duality. And it goes on forever, and it's ever increasing. It's apurvata, never before seen, every time you see it. Unlimited exchange of, and it is God's pleasure potency. So it's unlimited pleasure. It's at the highest level of intensity. It's always increasing. And practically, you cannot imagine it. And you hear about it, and you want it. This is what we want. We want to enter into that realm. Anything else will be cheated, because it'll be duality, and it won't be ultimately satisfying to the soul. Although we're conditioned in this material world by our samskaras, by our impressions of pleasure on a lower level since time immemorial, we're conditioned to want that and have some concept that this will be satisfying and ever-ending. But it never is. It's temporary, and it's so filled with duality. Because that which you like and that which you become attached to, not only does it wane in happiness, it's not a purvita, unprecedented. It's purvita, precedent. I've done this before. I've seen it before. And then the next time, well, now I've seen it twice. Now the next time, I've seen it three times. The first time, good. The second time, a little bit less. Okay, now I've been with it for 6 years. Now it's time for divorce. Not only is it not giving me pleasure, but I don't even like it. And then if there's some mature love in real relationship of service in a religious way, then still it's temporary. So it's trying to give us the concept of reality on the platform of the soul and these incredible exchanges where the heart melts on the pot of attraction. the attraction for God, the heart just becomes soft and melted. It means emotional, loving, responsive. And we see in the CC, the happiness makes God happy and makes God beautiful. So the devotees are happy. They become more beautiful in their happiness. And then God gets more pleasure. And the devotees become more happy and more beautiful. And God gets more pleasure. And we get more pleasure. And then ever increasing. It makes sense. If there is a God who has unlimited power without restriction, he can enjoy unlimitedly, and he can share that pleasure with others. That's the foundation of Krishna consciousness. And that's being described here. And it's very, very beautiful. The ladies, he's leaving. Their hearts are going out to Krishna. But it's pure. It's pure. It means that unlike material relationships where you want something for yourself, and you're in that kind of consciousness, how it will please me, the only thought in the love of the devotees is the pleasure of God. And therefore, the kama rup, even the conjugal relationship in the spiritual world, is completely pure in itself, because it's completely selfless. You're just thinking of Krishna. What does he enjoy? Not what I... What does he enjoy? The pure heart. Devoid of self. So here, the ladies are crying. And then they understand by the science. Everyone in India, you grow up, you know the science of omens. So the tears, oh, they're leaving and there's tears. That's inauspicious. The tears are coming. They're trying to wipe the tears. They don't want the tears to come, but the tears are coming. So their whole face is becoming wet with those tears. So the rasa, see, the nature of love is that it takes some form. Because love means you want to give the other person pleasure, and you give someone pleasure through the mind and the senses. In the spiritual world, there's mind and senses, but the focus is on the mind and senses of the others. So your love, let me please someone, it takes a shape. And it may take a shape of sound where you express your love through music. So Krishna is leaving. And then there's Madanga, Shankha, Paryascha, Veena, Panavago, Mukha, Dundur, Yanaka, Gantadya, Nedu, Dindu, Vayashtada. There's all different types of drums. Even Prabhupada translates Dunduri, another drum. Hey, if hey Chuck, you're listening, you gotta study this verse and tell us all the different drums. You gotta find out what these drums are. Dundu Baya, another different type of drum. See, there's three drums here, but they're all mentioned. A drum, another drum. But then it says Madanga, so we know. Prabhupada says sweet sounding drum. So this is Madanga, there's the kettle drums, and it's love. It's love. Glorification. Therefore, it's interesting, you know, a devotee, when you have a feast and glorification of someone, very interesting, you enjoy out of love. You go to the feast, and you it's a glorification of someone, you eat. And you enjoy for their pleasures. The spiritual world also has enjoyment. But your enjoyment is so wonderful. Your sensual experiences are so wonderful that you're doing it for the glorification of others. They're playing. There's trumpets here. There's drums. There's madanga, dol, nagra, dunduri, dundadi. And there's different types of flutes. And there's the veena, and there's trumpets, gomukha, peri, and dun 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 dun, you know, very glorious, and Krishna is leaving the palace, and people are watching him. It's floating in Rosh. Their hearts are melting. They do not want to blink their eyes. So for a second, they love Krishna is so pleasurable, they cannot tolerate to miss it. And they're going hither and thither. It means Krishna's going, they're moving. The whole... And then Arjuna, the great warrior, the intimate friend, then he takes up this umbrella with a handle of jewels embroidered with lace and pearls, and he's holding it over Krishna. And therefore Prabhupada, in his cutting edge, says they are using margarine instead of purified butter, and one-fourth of the city population is homeless, has no shelter. Right, just 50 years ago. And then Uddhava and Satyaki, great devotees, begin to fan the Lord with decorated fans. We can imagine these peacock feathers and chamaras with gold and silver and jewel handles. And then Krishna, I couldn't figure this out. I meditated on all morning. It said, Vikir Yamana, seated on scattered flowers. I don't know what it means. Was Krishna sat down? Why would he sit down? He's leaving. Maybe he sat down in a place. Krishna was just so overwhelmed with the reception. He just sits down in a place just to look at all the devotees in love. Just to look. There's love flowing. And Krishna's attached. He doesn't want to leave. He's leaving gradually. And then he looks out. And just sits down and just, again, wants to relish. And he's seated on scattered flowers. And now, here's a philosophical point that's being brought up. Because what's going to happen now is we're going to go into some prayers. The next few classes will be nice. We're going to get into some tattva, philosophy. It's always mixed here. Why? Because Madhva Acharya said that Madhurya is offered in the pot of Aishwarya. Because without Aishwarya, there's no sense of service. So there's a sense of service. So always, especially for us, the Dasya Ras is inspired by some Aishwarya. Even with Krishna and Vrindavan, there's Aishwarya. He lifts up Govardhan Hill, pinky of his left hand. There's some Aishwarya. So it keeps the pot of servitude strong. And then you love, conjugally, you love that, but it's something great. So the dasya is always there. So it's going to come to that. But anyway, it's then now this hearing that there's prayers, there's benedictions, and then it says it's befitting and not fitting. So, Prabhupada wants to explain this in the spiritual world. Well, it's befitting. Why is it befitting? What could you not say about Krishna? So even if they say something, in terms of Krishna as a person, in terms of relating them, in terms of whatever it is, it's befitting in one sense. Because you can't really describe the ultimate glories of God, but you're offering your love, so it's befitting. You're trying. And it's unbefitting, so the benedictions can never actually be enough. Amantasheshi with thousands of mouths for hundreds of years, what is it? Glorifying. It can't be enough. This is our basic premise. There is an absolute reality. Rasya Shaktir Vividayasis, he has unlimited potency. So you can't glory, and it's constantly, it's not limited, it's constantly expanding, the spiritual reality is, so how can you glorify it without limiting it? But how can you not glorify it? So it's befitting and it's unbefitting, because what could you give? What benediction can you give? What can you describe? And he's nirguna. He's without material qualities. And it appears to be within the frame of reference. So Prabhupada discusses this in the purport. I think it's an interesting point. He talks about the spiritual world not having duality. Because everything is on the absolute platform. So there's a Advayam Gyan. It's all the same, in one sense, because it's God. So the opposites are all, and he gives the example of the non-duality of Krishna being a thief. In this world, there's a duality. You know, you call someone a thief, then that's bad. Gotta go. Okay. You call someone a thief, that's bad. You know, and then there's a good, to be a non-thief, to be an honest man. But here, he makes the example of Krishna as a thief, and Krishna as honest, whatever it is, they're not different. They're referring to the absolute reality. And even a thief becomes something glorified in the spiritual. Actually, we love so much that Krishna is a thief, that he's mucking chore, that he's stealing the butter. He goes into the houses of the gopis, and I guess the butter and yogurt is hanging on clay pots. And he climbs up on a little pile, some mortars or whatever it is, goes and takes a stick. How naughty. Can you imagine how naughty Krishna is? I don't know who's out there listening with kids. You know, but I don't know, you know. I don't know if, you know, you make, well, I don't know, there's not that much cooking going on as those days. You don't make your own butter. But imagine, as bad as your kid is, right, he goes into a neighbor's house, opens the refrigerator, invites all the street dogs into the house, and feeds them everything in your refrigerator. Right? And then passes stool and urine all over the floor. And then he's glorified. Then that's no different from the kid who's sitting there and so well behaved, right? At the class, there's one kid that's, you know, the mother brings the child, and he just sits in the back, and he's just quiet. And I said, oh, look at this baby. He's just completely quiet, right? And then another kid runs right into the class. Oh, I don't want to tell you. I remember one sannyasi was giving a class, and one little kid came in, turned around and pulled his pants down. And that kid was bad. We can't imagine how naughty Krishna was. He would come into other people's houses constantly, take a stick, break the butter, break the yogurt, it comes on the floor, feed all the monkeys. See, the monkeys, and there's nothing worse in India than the monkeys. They're torturous. The monkeys in Vrindavan are torturous. Wherever I live in Vrindavan, I live in a cage. It's really interesting. If you see the house, somehow, I live in one house, Giriraj Swami's house, but somehow they didn't have the vision to build it from India. So they made a big porch in the front. Right? They made a porch. In India, you don't make an open porch. They made a porch in front of the thing. Then the rest of it's caged in. The rest of the porch is caged in. So my karma was, I should have been in prison. But because I'm a devotee, I live in Vrindavan, and I'm behind bars. The place I lived at Baladev's previous place, we used to call New Alcatraz. Because to get to my house, you had to go through seven gates that would bang loudly. The front gate, the next gate after that, up there. And that also, they made a nice porch for the monkeys. So the but I said, Indradyumna Swami bought this house, his disciple bought a house for him next to my house. And it's like a huge cage. You can't even believe it. You figure it would be like for monkeys to jump around. They'd give a lot of space. Because it's like, you know, 40 feet high, the cage. I thought that in the Kali Yuga, the human beings are in the cage. Anyway, the monkeys need this. So here, non-duality. On that platform, everything is pleasure. And therefore you have separation, it's pleasure. It's the same love. It's the same happiness. Happiness is love. In the spiritual world, everything invokes love. So it all has that quality. Here we have separation. There's love, but because it's mixed with our own sentiments and our own desires, we're also suffering in separation. There's separation. The gopis are burning in the fire. What is it? Rati Manjari, she prays. And this is in Valap Kushmanjali, a book by Raghunath Das Goswami. Valap means lamentation, and Kushmanjali means a bouquet of lamentation. So she prays. The Radharani, with the red lack of your lotus feet, please cure this servant of yours who is near dead by the snake bite of separation from you. Near dead. But it's pleasure. They give the example of, I always give this example, when we were young, we would wait for the good humor man to come along with the ice cream truck. Somehow these things are not here like they used to be. But, you know, you get the ice cream, and then you'd ask the guy, give me a piece of dry ice. And then you come to your friend, and you put the ice on him, and it would burn. It was cold, but it would burn. So the same sense, it's separation, but it has the opposite effect, happiness. And union has happiness. So the duality in this world, there's a difference between the activities and your desire. Like you have some love and some affection, it's filled with duality, it's filled with pain because it's temporary. It's temporary. And the more suffering. I know my sister-in-law, she was diagnosed with cancer, very nice lady, offering my prayers for her. So her relationship with my brother has never been better. Because my brother, he puts me on his mailing list and he writes about how she's doing. And we're in the city and Central Park, things can't go better. But it's duality. Because he's enjoying her more now. But he's also suffering more for it because she's going to die. You always get these polarities. And it was Vyamdutiya Beniveshita Syat Vishadute Asyavifar, you know, the material world is born of duality. Why? Because it's an illusion. We're not the body, and therefore there's some duality. There's a difference between what we're doing. What it actually is. Spiritual world is no duality. In this world, there's duality between what you're enjoying and what it actually is. What something is and what it actually is. There's a difference. This is what a dream is, duality. It's different from what it actually is. So you get these polarities and these opposite effects. The spiritual world, it's only reality. Prabhupada gives this example about the absolute truth. We'll do one more verse and stop the questions. Very nice. Anyonyam asitanjalpa uttama shloka chetasam Kuravendra Purastinam Sarva Shruti Manohara absorbed in the thought of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who is sung in select poetry. The ladies on the roofs of all the houses of Hastinapur began to talk to him. This talk was more attractive than the Vedic hymn. This is so interesting, too. More attractive than the Vedic hymn. And how attractive it is. Krishna's leaving, and then on the roof, they're talking. Krishna, 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 Krishna. It's all love talk. It's all love talk. Not Krishna, 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 Krishna. Material world is like that. The talk is all hate, isn't it? Most of when you hear someone say, someone, it's all enmity. It's all enmity, right? This. It's all enmity. Spiritual world is all love. It's pouring forth. This is, you know, from the ceilings. Oh, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Yasomati nandana praja bara nagara sokula rantana sana. Next slide. Arana dana madana manahara madani dana amala harina mamiya vilasa amala harina mamiya vilasa purandara sambhagavara Ivadana Suvasa. That'll be fun. Sandara 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 Nanda Godana Rakowala Nanda Rakowala Madhava Navanita Taskara Govinda Madhava Navanita Taskara Gopala. So beautiful. You can't stop. Gopala. So they're singing, and they're Krishna and his names and his activities. When Mother Yasoda is cooking in the morning, what is she chanting? Vibhava risesha aloka provesha hidrachari uta jiva Polo Hari Hari Mukunda Murari Rama Krishna Hayagri. They're always singing, so the kirtan is natural. And it's said here, it's more attractive than the Vedic hymn. Because this type of talk is right from the heart. You see, it's described, the difference between Vaidhi and Rag. Right? You follow the rules. Why do you follow the rules? You get to love. Right? It's like steps. The steps are not to stay on the steps. The steps is for the goal. So it's not that we follow rules and regulations, but that's not the goal. The goal is the love. So people chant the Vedic hymns and they learn Sanskrit. And therefore, it's a purpose. The purpose is to get love. Doing that, you're concerned with the meter, the mantra, the rules, the karma, nipano, vipro, mantra, tantra, vishara, the rules, how you do. It's a little bit more formal. Language. simple talk, direct. I love you, Krishna. I love, and it's more intimate. It's pleasing to God, even though it doesn't have the sophistication. And Prabhupada gives the example of the simple Bengali of Narottam Das Thakur and how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the most learned Acharya, has approved the song to be as good as the Vedic mantras. And this is because of the subject matter. The language is immaterial, the subject matter is important. Prabhupada goes to the essence. So the ladies, I'm reading from the purport, who are all absorbed in the thoughts and action of the Lord, develop the consciousness of Vedic wisdom by the grace of the Lord. And therefore, although such ladies might not have been learned scholars in Sanskrit or other, whatever they spoke was more attractive than the Vedic hymns. The Vedic hymns in the Upanishads are sometimes indirectly directed to the Supreme Lord. But the talks of the ladies were directly speaking, and therefore they were more pleasing to the heart. So the talks were more valuable than the learned Bhavan. So this is the bhakti. Simple. I don't know which devotees were with us in Ek Chakra one year. Before they had electricity, we went to Ek Chakra. And we went to the Bunkim Roy Temple. And we went to the Bunkim Roy Temple. And this guy led a kirtan. He was completely blind. It was phenomenal. Simple. This guy was simple. And the funny part about it, he was completely blind. You know, in India, they don't even wear sunglasses. You just see white eyes. And, you know, it's like... And this guy led a kirtan with such bhav. He didn't have a dhoti on. He didn't have a kurta on. He had a New York Giants sweatshirt on. We don't know where he got that in the middle of the village. He's leading kirtan with such a... But on Narottam Das Thakur, of course, it's beautiful. What are our favorite Narottam Das Thakur songs? Radha Krishna Pranamora Yugala Kishora Jivane Morani Gati Aro Nahi Mor Kulindira Kuli Keli Kandamberavan Rasana Bedira Upara Bosa Bodu. Very simple songs, but the essence. Is it also Hariharaya Nama Krishna Yavaya? Yadavaya Madhavaya Savaya Ma. Gopal Govinda Ram Srimadusudha Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Sita Hari Guru Vaishnava Bhagavata Gita Sri Rup Sri Satana Vata Raguna. Wow. Andara Chanana Seva Bhakti Sanivas Janane Janne Hoy Abhilas 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 Andara Charana Seva. All I desire is birth after birth. Give me the association of the pure. Simple request, simple language, the essence of the Vedas. Krishna Das Babaji, Prabhupada's godbrother, who he said was a Kinshina. Amazing. He was out of this world. Just, your Guru Maharaj used to be very close with him. So, Bhakti Chura Swami, Kinshina Krishna died. Amazing. And one day, Didi Govinda Swami saw him the front door trying to get into Prabhupada's house. There weren't that many people in Vrindavan in those days. The movement wasn't that big. I remember, 20 years ago, they couldn't even fill up the guest house. It was empty. The guest house was empty in Vrindavan. There wasn't the MBT. The guest house was empty. Prabhupada was concerned. How do we get people to come? If there weren't cars, people would only come during Kartik or they wouldn't come. They only come from Gaur Purnima. 11 months of the year, no one from ISKCON came to Vrindavan. So there weren't that many devotees there, actually. And the transportation, there was no taxis one taxi in Vrindavan. There was no auto rickshaws. If you want to go someplace, bus. There was no phones. You go to Vrindavan, you were at the end of the world. Communication was shut off. So people weren't just going there for vacations. And then also there's no bottled water. The people would get sick. There was no phones. It was a little bit different story. No electricity practically. Krishnas Babaji was at the front door, shaking the door, trying to get in. Govindamar said, go around the back. So he went around the back. And when he went around the back, Govindamar said, let me see what's happening. Prabhupada was ill. So Krishnadas Babaji was sitting on Prabhupada's bed. And Prabhupada was laughing because you can imagine, who did Prabhupada have to associate with? These young disciples, they were sincere. But there was no one his age that he sacrificed that kind of relish of friendship. He had all these young, disturbed children to take care of. So Prabhupada was laughing. Then he heard Prabhupada say, Tandara Charana Seva Bhakti, let me relish the association of the pure devotees, birth after birth. So now this begins the section of the ladies of Hastinapur. They're absorbed, and their talk was more attractive than the Vedic hymns. But because the nature of bhakti, it says that one on the path of bhakti can move down the path with his eyes closed. What does that mean? The eyes, one eye is Shruti, one eye is Smriti. If you have love, that love will carry you to perfection without considering what is the rule, what is the regulation. Out of love, you'll do what's right. It's like a mother. A mother has love, she becomes a good mother. PhD in child care does not make a good mother, because she has to put the kids in, she has to put the kids in daycare to get her degree. We see that there's not a correlation that the most educated people in the world become the best mothers. I don't say they become the worst, but we don't see that correlation. We don't see it among devotees. We don't see it at the outside that according to one's intellectual capacity, they become a good mother, according to the amount of books they read. They become a good mother according to their degree of love and sacrifice. And then by that love of sacrifice, they learn everything. So here, by that love, now they're going to chant verses that contain the essence of knowledge of the Vedic. Okay, we'll stop now for questions.
Hi,
Krishna Maharaj.
This is Gail.
Well,
Gaurangi. You are definitely in the Poconos. I can tell.
Gaurangi's on the phone call. They don't refer to you by Gail here.
Oh, I know that. I was initiated a long time ago, Maharaj.
I know that. I found that out. Now the whole mystery's been solved. So we shouldn't let others know here, but unauthorized, but because it's out of love,
yes, we're on the rag mark.
I understand now, Gurangi. Go ahead.
I came on right away because this last point is exactly what I've been wanting to ask you about. actually this last point in conjunction with, you know, this, you know, guru thing, you know, where the idea that love can is enough to guide the lover in his or her care of their beloved. Because when I think of that concept, I think, well, what about the idea of misguided, like, good intentions? Because, for example, you know, a mother or a guru, they might have, out of love, good intentions in their direction of the child or disciple, but it may be still misguided. So, you know, how is that reliable to have love for your beloved?
Yeah, as usual, Gail, you ask very deep, interesting questions. See, someone who has love, it impels them to find out what to do. And if that's also studying the Shastra, you study the Shastra. For example, in the path of Rag Marg, when it says not following the rules of, you know, beyond the Shastras, whatever that it means one is not necessarily on that level of this is talking about the level of pure love. First of all, the point you should understand also is that when it talks about those verses about spontaneity, it says that the love is actually there, not that one is just developing that love.
Not just that what?
One is developing the love, he actually achieves it. Because if you try to act spontaneously before you've actually achieved that level, then it's hard to remain fixed in devotion. That's what it says. That we study in that. It's hard to remain fixed in devotion because, but it's talking about someone who actually has that level of devotion and love. And also, it also mentions another interesting point there is when it says that he's above, you know, that he's not guided by the Shastra, because spontaneously he wants to serve Krishna. But he's very interested in the Bhakti Shastras, because the Bhakti Shastras discuss how to please Krishna. So it's not that that the love is devoid of knowledge. It means that the love will guide one to knowledge. The person who loves, the child is sick, it doesn't mean she'll give the child anything, but she'll call a doctor, and she'll find out what to do, and if she needs to... In other words, it doesn't mean that the person with love doesn't get educated. But it means that when he has that love, that's the main thing that will make him good in his activity on that level. And same thing in serving Krishna. What will make you expert in serving Krishna is not just that you're adherent to rules and regulations, but if you have devotion, it'll inspire you to serve. In other words, you'll spontaneously do things. It means you won't have to struggle with the mind. In other words, the person with love naturally does it. The person who doesn't have love, he has to impose some activity from the Shastra. Let me do this. And therefore, because the mind is not attracted to Krishna, he's always struggling with the mind, who wants to do other things than that activity. And that will be the same thing with a mother who doesn't have love. It's not just a question of knowledge, it's a question of sacrifice. So she may know what to do, but it may be hard to stay with her child all day. It may be hard to cook all those meals. It may be hard to, you know, because the love is not there. So that's the point. The love enables you to do the activity in relationship. And we're talking about relationship. But of course, you know, a person with love just, you know, He, it's not that he doesn't try to understand what to do. The point about love is that it's easier for him to do the activity. They can perform more sacrifice in the activity. And therefore, it describes when a person on Rag Marg can transgress the scriptures. It's talking about, you know, Varnashram. those type of rules. In other words, he's not. It's not that he breaks principles, but he's not concerned to be guided on that platform. He naturally follows. And if the rule doesn't serve his love, if he gets spontaneous and he's chanting all night, then he may go to sleep at 3 in the morning, then he breaks the rule not waking up for Mangal Arati. Because he was so absorbed. So, you know, something like that. But it doesn't mean he transgressed the Bhakti Shastris, because that shows you how to love God. That he follows those scriptures. So I think that's the concept. And in terms of, it's not that they don't try to find out what to do. It's just that when you have devotion, it's easier to do the activity. And there's more impetus to do the activity. And that impetus also inspires you to learn what to do with that activity. That's where the love comes in.
Yeah, there's more natural motivation to serve, you know, the beloved. But still, you know, is it that only when your love is perfected that there's no room for mistake in taking care of your subordinate or your beloved or whatever?
First of all, the point that I made was that I wasn't talking about perfection. At that type of level, when you have that type of love, yeah, you're guided. You're guided by that love. You're guided by the super soul. Krishna's talking to you in your heart. There is the gopis. Look at the gopis. They broke the greatest transgression. They left their husbands. They left their children. They went in the middle of the night to see Krishna. They broke all Vedic rules and regulations. But as Prabhupada said, they didn't have to know Krishna. They were simply loving Krishna. That's the goal.
You know,
so
the real...
I'm always concerned. What? What's that?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That almost sounded Italian. Are you talking to me?
Not in that mood, though.
What?
Not in the Italian mood.
Okay. Hey, you talking to me? Okay.
Yes, the reverberation or something threw me off. The real question is, Maharaj, I hope this is not too like a borderline tangential, but I mean, along these same lines, you know, how do we have faith that, you know, the guru may not, although having good intentions, misdirect the disciple?
What? Did you still on, Gail?
Yeah, I don't know what that was. That was from the Sangha line or something, I think.
Someone said, we're recording this conversation.
It said, stop recording conversations. Stop recording conversations. I don't know what that was.
Boy, you want to talk about Guru Tat for now, that's long, but the...
Well, I mean, for me, it's the same question.
I'm just saying, but I'm not sure this is a question that can be discussed at the end.
Okay,
at the end.
That's okay. We can talk about it.
I can say something about that. The understanding is that if one represents Krishna, he represents Shastra. And, you know, taking a guru means that one has faith that he understands Shastra, and that he has faith that he applies it in the realms in which he has the proper frame of reference to do so. He doesn't give you business decisions because he's not expert in business. He may not give you family counseling because he's not expert in family. He's representing the Shastra. And that's the qualification of guru, that he understands the Shastra. So, you know, when you go to a teacher, if you go to a teacher and he's a maestro in music, you know, that's your faith. Your faith that in his subject, he knows the subject. And because he knows the subject, then that's why you're approaching him. You want to learn music? You learn music. And here's the maestro. He's a master in that subject. So that's the same faith in terms of someone, you know, the master is the master of the Shastra. And he can tell you what the Shastra says in those particular instances and applied it, and there's qualifications for a guru that he stood and realized the Shastra.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's honest and sincere. I think Prabhupada also said it's not that, you know, you lose faith because he doesn't know a particular verse. You know, but he knows the application of it. So I'm saying a guru tattva is a very, very difficult subject. But no one is implored to take a spiritual master unless he feels the inner necessity to do it, that he feels that he needs guidance or she needs guidance in spiritual life, and this person has that knowledge that they need. And when that faith is there, then one wants to take that guidance and understanding, applies it in his life, and feels the practical result. So it's a very, very serious business, and it's a very, very high qualification. And I, you know, it's hard to have faith because so many people have fallen down. And at the same time, people who are teachers, they know their limits. And to the extent that they know their limits, or even to the extent that whatever their qualification is they try to represent the previous acharya and try to understand his teachings and present it in a transparent way, a transparent via medium. They try to be humble and transparent to the teachings of the Shastra. And, the way to get faith is first to enter into that relationship and see if it's efficacious. You go to a doctor, you know, maybe he can make a mistake, maybe he doesn't know everything, but if you're sick and there's a doctor and he's an authority in medicine, and that relationship, it should become evident. And if it becomes evident that their realization is much more than yours, and you have a right to first check that out. Right? And it's not like the spiritual master is looking for disciples. He can't help someone unless they have faith. He doesn't want someone without faith. You know, and same thing. I just think the example, of course, Prabhupada's godbrother Sridhar Maharaj gave the example, which I thought is also quite relevant. In a war, you may not have the highest doctors on the battlefield to treat all this. So they make medics. What a medic is a person who's trained in medical knowledge. He may not have the highest, but in that relationship with the person on the battlefield, if that medic knows his limitations and is willing, where he's not sure, to consult with authority, you know, then the same effect goes there. So in our line, I see people are very humble. They try to give Prabhupada. They have their own realizations also. And Krishna's also, guru is not just a person. It's also a principle. And if the relationship is there, the principle of knowledge will come through that person, which we do have experience, all of us, when we preach Krishna consciousness. And somehow the super soul speaks through us. But it's the external manifestation of the super soul. Of course, the frame of reference has to be there in terms of the person's understanding and knowledge of Shastra, these qualifications that are given. He should be fixed in the absolute truth. And person should be extremely reluctant to take that position, but out of service they may have to do. Just like the medic, out of service he may have to do it. may have to take that role. But you should be able to help the person. You should have the medical knowledge to help the person. And the person should have authority that he does, because you can't help someone unless they have faith in you. But that authority may be is that he's trained and he's always looking to the, you know, maybe the qualified one or the top one. So I feel that way in terms of, I don't feel qualified, but I feel trying to help people. And if something's not clear, I trust the realizations of Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas. Anyway, that's a short answer in a short time, Gail.
Well, that was a very wonderful answer, Maharaj. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. But, today I'll be driving after this, so I may call you, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Any other questions?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
Thanks so much for a wonderful talk today.
I'm with the Bhattacharya family.
Uh-huh.
If I say Gurangi, they become very excited. If I say Mahamuni, oh, yeah, because, we all grew up in that dynamicism of that when we were all in Tuaka together, So they're all remembering the ecstasies we used to have. Go ahead.
I think my impression of what Gail's question was getting at, and I may be wrong, but I'm using it for my question, is that we have the notion that the more you love Krishna, the more your cognitive faculties become enhanced. So it's like your ability to decipher reality goes hand in hand with your love of Krishna, and I think it's pretty. I mean, the Gita is pretty clear about that, and so. You provided the example of the worldly example of a mother, that if she loves her child, she wants to do whatever it takes to help the child, and that love will lead her to normally do the right thing. So my question is, I thought that what Gail was getting at was, is this like an absolute?
I think, but there's so much sacrifice involved.
I'm sorry, Marsh.
Not only lead her to do the right thing, but to perform the sacrifice.
Okay, thank you. Right, not just to know it.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I guess this makes sense to me, and as you've said, even in my own very limited experience, I remember doing Sankirtan or preaching and feeling in retrospect that in some little way the Super Soul guided me at some time. And I think that really advanced devotees probably feel that guidance all the time. But what Gail was getting at is, I think there's a fairly common experience that advanced devotees aren't like robots who never make mistakes. And Srila Prabhupada himself said that the guru is being perfect doesn't mean the guru doesn't make mistakes. The guru may forget verses, the guru may forget a name, the guru may make a decision, whatever. But the guru's perfection is that he's sincerely always trying to serve and preach. So. Are you advancing to the position here that the guru becomes like almost like omniscient or something as they become advanced? Because I've seen devotees use that term. I mean, there's a biography of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji where the devotee, who had, I think at the time of the Ritvik, kept calling him omniscient. And that reminded me of the kind of pretensions that people want to have towards Prabhupada being omniscient.
That's a real tough one, because as you know, knowledge requires faith. Because a lot of times understanding takes work. And if you don't have faith, you won't be able to understand. So even the Upanishad says, even when there's knowledge, you have to think about it, you have to understand it, etc. Effort and work. And if you don't respect someone, right, you won't even consider what they have to say. So what is called, what's the word, epistemic, what is it?
Epistemic?
Epistemic, yeah. There's a faculty of understanding. And it requires some faith. And so Yeah, there has to be a reasonable understanding, conception that the person is authority, a spiritual authority, whatever subject you have. You have to have faith that that person's authority. And it's very, very dangerous. I mean, it's very dangerous to get on the empirical platform. You know, so it's a very, very fine line. So the general understanding is of getting transcendental knowledge is there must be what is it called? Gail knows that Tatshradhan and Muna Yoga. They're seriously inquisitive. You know, there must be faith and doubting at the same time. You know, there must be faith, and that if there's not faith, then you can't consider the subject enough to understand it clearly. But at the same sense, if you're just blind and accept whatever you hear, even if it doesn't make sense to you, then what will happen is a lot of times you'll be accepting your own misunderstandings of what you think the truth is. So I think if there's a healthy relationship in this dialectic and an allowance of hearing doubts. In other words, in fact, that's supposed to be the role of Guru, that he clears doubts. And if one doesn't clear doubts, it's described that even if one hears what's true, he may hear it in the wrong way. You may hear bhakti and you may think yeah. You may hear bhakti and you may think karma. Look at the ways in which people have interpreted Prabhupada. You have people that interpret it as gyan, and hearing from Prabhupada, renunciation becomes the goal. And other people, you know, karma. And you can hear it different ways, so it's a dialectic. And so that should be the thing. So if it's on spiritual subject matters, you accept that person as authoritative. But if you have some question, you're allowed to raise doubts. But if it's on another realm, then it can be questioned. And even, you know, Prabhupada was questioned on a particular decision or something. He may change his mind. So I think it depends what realm it's at. And I think your question here is, you don't want to relativize the position to the point that it becomes useless. And you don't want to elevate the position to the extent that the authority extends into any area, you know? You know, that... But also, if the guru is going to actually give instruction, etc., it's not that he's going to give... It's going to be an application of the Shastra and the Vaishnava Siddhanta to a particular circumstance. So... I think it's a very, you know, this guru touch is a very, very subtle thing. But I was actually with my godbrother, Bhakti Puri Madhava Maharaj. He's the scientist, Dr. Michael Marchetti. He spent a couple of years with Sridhar Maharaj. He was very, very strong on the authority of the people. So I guess it's a combination of that you have to have trust in the person, you know, that the person is sincere, there's not a motive, he wants a person's welfare, and that you're
Maharaj, is it possible that you accidentally muted your phone? If you can hear me, I can't hear you anymore. Maharaj?
Yeah.
I lost you.
You lost me completely?
Just for the last 5, 6, 7 seconds.
Okay, I don't even remember what I said, but...
Well, you were talking about your godbrother and his how Sridhar Maharaj really emphasized Guru, and then I lost you.
Yeah, it was very... the concept, and as Prabhupada presented it, it's one of surrender and faith. And you really can't get out of that if you really want to advance his spiritual understanding and spiritual knowledge. But I'm just saying, you have such a relationship that one's doubts can be cleared. It's not that, you know, something is said and you don't understand it, and, you know, you should be able to clear it and get it understood. But if it ultimately comes down to it and one accepts a guru, and, you know, I know I disagree, then you're not accepting that person's authority. And what's the relationship either? You know? So, you know, there's a way to handle it also. it's a challenge. It's a tough thing. You understand what I'm saying?
I do, and I appreciate, I really appreciate how you've explained it, and there's a few things I would hope to ask, but I don't know if we're going over. Maybe I should ask you some other time.
Such a subject. Go ahead.
Okay, so it seems that there's two things that you said that struck me, and please let me know if this is the correct understanding. It seems to me that the relationship with the guru has two aspects. There's a kind of bhakti relationship, and there's a knowledge relationship. One is that the guru is the object of our service. The other is the guru is the person we go to for knowledge. And in some cases, if I understand what you're saying, is that we shouldn't forget the fact that the guru is the person we serve to serve Krishna. And if we kind of just sit back and approach the guru kind of like a question-answering machine, and then we, from our own perspective, try to figure out if they're right or not or whatever, then we're not entering into the relationship in such a way that we can have this fruit of spirit. We can't really have spiritual insight because we're not engaging in the bhakti relationship. Does that make sense, Marge? I don't know, you didn't say it like that, but it kind of struck me that...
People hear and they can't hear what we're talking about, so it's frustrating for them, too. I'm getting distracted. Say that again.
That in some ways, there's some you had mentioned a few times in your answer that the point of like our relationship with the guru is that we're meant to serve and gain insight and realization by that service. It's not just that we go to the guru to get kind of propositional answers or something, like just mere kind of surface level answers to questions. And it just struck me that sometimes, like, you know, it seems like there's two kinds of relationships we have with the guru. One is a bhakti relationship, where they're the object of our service, and the other is a knowledge relationship, where we go to them to get knowledge. And that if we simply approach, if we simply act like it's a knowledge relationship, then we won't act in the bhakti relationship properly, and therefore we won't have the spiritual wisdom and insight that actually is supposed to be the fruit of our spiritual practice.
I'm not sure of your question, but. You know, Advaiti Pratipatana, Prashnena Sevya, Upadekshanti Tekya, just surrender the spiritual, but, you know, yeah, you, that's the relationship, and with that relationship comes the fruit. So, of course, that relationship can be, that relationship can become affected if, One doesn't have a proper person. He's getting answers that are not shastric, and you know, obviously. But hopefully, if someone finds the proper person who knows the shastra, etc., then he will be inspired to surrender that person's authority. And if on a rare occasion something doesn't coincide with his understanding, he'll try to get his doubts cleared. And even if then he doesn't understand it, it won't affect the tenor of the relationship, because his experience will be by surrender, one is getting knowledge and understanding. And the thing that doesn't actually, you know, understand, he'll just sit with it. And he'll accept that, you know, because he doesn't want to change the tenor of the relationship and ruin the faculty he has for actually getting deeper knowledge. I can tell you that very frankly. You know, I'm also, that's why I track people who are intellectual with doubts, etc. I'm like that myself. And I can say in my own relationship with Rafa, it's not always I understood what his teachings were or what something, and sometimes I thought I knew maybe better, maybe this doesn't make sense or something. But I can see as the relationship develops how many times I found out that my perception of the absolute truth, which I thought may have had a different understanding or something, was the effect of my own lack of understanding and conditioning. And how many times Prabhupada's truth and realization reigns supreme. Till this factor, after going on this for so many years, I'm just throwing my hands up in surrender. It just happened so many times to me now that in the end, Prabhupada turned out to be right. I'm getting more and more to the point. Maybe I need to become a guru unless I became a good disciple. But I'm getting to the point of just throwing my hands up because just so many times I'm seeing, how... And therefore, if I would have insisted on my own authority, I would have been shut off to, based on my empiricism and my intellect and, and my understanding. If I kept that in the relationship, I would have been cut off from so many profound, deep understandings of the absolute truth that Prabhupada realized and saw. And I couldn't see because I didn't have that perception. Even when I thought, this can't be, it's unfortunate in this age that there's so much doubt, and we have so many bad impressions of authority, both in our own upbringing, both in the spiritual realm, that the simple faith is so much been compromised in us. It's unfortunate in one sense. I could say that for myself. He could also be cheated. And that's where Prabhupada's thing said, if the person's sincere and he's a preacher, don't worry. He only wants your best. He's a spiritual authority. He knows the Shastra. Don't get hung up if there's something that seems wrong or something because it's not motivated. It's just in the realm of preaching and they want to help. Maybe they say something. It's not wrong. It's never wrong. But maybe it's misapplied to a particular circumstance, etc., because the frame of reference is not full or something. I give an example. Someone could have came into Prabhupada and said, what this person did, and Prabhupada maybe would have said, okay, and he would have spoke very heavily. Now, his point was Prabhupada didn't apply to that person. And someone said, it wasn't that person, Prabhupada, he did that. Okay. I don't know if that happened. And then we talked the point, too, is that that's aside, everything is recorded. But no, that has to be one's faith. One has to have faith in Prabhupada as the Acharya, and then he has to have faith that someone has surrendered to him sincerely, has understood his teaching, and can present it. And that he's sincere, and that one can get his doubts cleared. And if in the realm of affirmationship, the one thing that doesn't seem to be understood,
Marge, I hear you for the most part, but I keep hearing pots being banged and stuff, so I can't, just times when I don't hear you.
I'm not in the kitchen here.
I'm not either.
This is such a deep, deep subject, but I think we can't change the philosophy. Guru is Krishna. It's the potency of Krishna that manifests through someone. And once you take a guru, when in that relationship, he feels that knowledge potency manifesting. And not just sentimentally either. The person's also learning in the Shastra and he can clear doubts. So, it never should be forced upon someone. It's the person's choice, and he has to enter into relationships and be satisfied that that's what they're getting. And they should be. It's just like a doctor. Maybe he still will make a mistake, but if he's the authoritative doctor, what would be the mistake? The mistake will be not in the principles of medicine, but in analyzing the patient. in making the thing, sometimes the prognosis, he may not have the full information. And it may not even be within his realm, but he'll give the medical opinion properly. And he'll be very cautious. He'll investigate everything. And he'll let person know his choices, you know. It's so complex because you not have to understand the philosophy. There's so many billions of applications, so many circumstances, but we should understand the philosophy of Guru Tantra, that it's a relationship, and through that relationship, Krishna manifests, the Super Soul manifests, and the person knows the Shastra. Fixed in the Shastra, and he's fixed in the absolute truth, and he knows Shastra. Okay. All right.
Thanks
for that enlivening questions. And
I know you're trying to end it, Maharaj, but you know, but I mean, that it seemed like you just glossed over something that was so heavy. You know, that the guru might misanalyze. He might know the Shastra, but he might misanalyze the patient.
Well, I don't want to get into that now. I'm talking about that. I'm just talking about a simple framework. It was very, very one very very learned scholar in Vrindavan, a great, you know. So all he saw, he lived in his little hut. You know, all he saw of ISKCON, life membership directors, you know, people with making money. That's all he saw. Someone asked him about that, and he applied the Shastra of what that means. That's not bhakti, but he didn't have the rest of the frame of reference. It wasn't that his principles of Shastra.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
In that circumstance, that was his frame of reference. And someone said, no, that's not what they are. They're also this. Then he said, oh, yes, that's okay.
Okay.
So in that sense, Prabhupada may say, he said this, but no, okay, then that's okay. What I'm saying is the principle is always applied properly, but sometimes the frame of reference may not be full. And it's not that the person's going to be fixed on that. And Prabhupada may also say, then that's okay. I've seen arguments and discussions with Prabhupada where he says something. They say, no, Prabhupada, that's not it. He also does this, oh, yes, then that's okay. Mm-hmm. So it's never that the principle is wrong. He's prying the Shastra, etc. Sometimes, you know, the frame of reference, then it has to be, that's it, okay. Okay?
Yeah, that's good, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, you already found the bona fide girl.
Okay. And please say hello to her for me.
She's offering her obeisances to you back now.
Well, we'll fight about that in temple today, I'm sure.
Don't worry, Gail. She just made a mistake. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Everybody having enough problems here. Thank you.
What a wild class today. Okay.
Thanks, Marge. I appreciate it. Perfect.
Thank you even more, Marge.
Now that everything is clear, I'm sure you'll be peaceful.
Yes.